I was just looking at the calendar this morning, and it's February 2026. And for the first time in a really long time, it actually feels like we're living in that future we were promised.
It definitely feels that way. I mean, especially if you're spending your days inside an IDE.
Exactly. Look at just the last few weeks. We've got Anthropic releasing the new security scanning built right into Claude Code. We've got OpenAI's Aardvark. And it's not just autocomplete anymore, right?
No, not at all. It's vastly more sophisticated.
Right. It's like having a team of expert security researchers literally looking over your shoulder while you type. They're just fixing vulnerabilities before you even hit save.
It is an incredibly impressive leap in technology. The whole idea that we can catch zero-day vulnerabilities in the source code as it's actually being written, that is huge. It's that old dream of shifting left finally realized right there in the editor.
It really is. It feels like that shiny new toy phase, but for once, the toy is actually, useful.
Very useful.
So it kind of feels like, dare I say it, have we solved the security problem? I mean, if the AI writes perfect code or instantly fixes my bad code, are we done? Can we all just pack up and go home?
I really wish it were that simple.
Yeah, I figured you'd say that.
In fact, that exact feeling, that sort of mission accomplished feeling, is exactly what we need to get into today. Because while we're all out here celebrating the end of syntax errors and logic bugs, we might be missing a much bigger, much scarier picture.
Okay, well, you're the expert here, so I assume you're about to thoroughly ruin my good mood.
Just a little bit. We're doing a deep dive into a really thought-provoking thesis by Yoav Landman, the CTO over at JFrog. And his core argument is basically this: while we're all high-fiving about AI fixing our source code, we're completely ignoring the fact that source code isn't really the thing that matters anymore.
Wait, how can source code not matter? I mean, software's code. That's literally the definition of it.
Well, it used to be. In the traditional model we all grew up with, source code was the center of gravity. You wrote it, you reviewed it, you secured it. That was the main asset.
Right.
But Landman argues that here in 2026, source code is really just an intermediate step. It's a recipe. But the actual meal, the thing you serve to the customer, the thing that actually gets shipped and deployed, that is a binary artifact.
Okay, let's unpack that distinction a bit because I think a lot of people listening probably use those terms interchangeably. When you say binary artifact, what exactly are we talking about here?
We're talking about the compiled package, the container image, the jar file, the Docker image, the NPM package. It's the actual thing that executes on a machine.
Got it. The finished product.
Exactly. And here is where the math gets a little scary. Think about a modern application. What percentage of that final binary artifact would you say is code that you actually sat down and wrote?
I mean, I write the business logic, right? I write the glue holding it together. So maybe, I don't know, 40%.
In a lot of modern enterprise applications, it's closer to 10%, sometimes even less.
Wow, only
Think
10%.
about it. You import a web framework.
Here.
You pull in a logging library. You use a database driver. Those are all binary artifacts you didn't write. And those libraries, they have their own
All
dependencies.
right.
And those dependencies have their own dependencies. It's the deep transitive libraries, the friends of friends in that massive dependency tree.
Right. That's the stuff that gets pulled in automatically that I don't even see in my package.json file.
Exactly. And now, today, it's even more complex because we have AI artifacts in that mix too. We've got skills, agents, plugins, MCP servers.
It's just piling up.
It really is. So when you trigger a build, you are essentially taking your tiny little slice of perfect AI-verified source code, and you're gluing it to a massive mountain of binary blobs that you didn't write and that your brand new AI assistant never even looked at.
Okay, so I'm sitting here thinking I'm this master sculptor, right? Chipping away at my marble, making it totally perfect. But in reality, I'm more like, I don't know, a general contractor.
That is a fantastic analogy, actually. You're a general contractor assembling a massive skyscraper. You can make absolutely sure the specific bricks you lay are perfect.
Right?
But if the steel beams you bought from a third-party vendor have microscopic cracks in them,
Or if the cement mixer I rented has a bomb inside it.
precisely, then your perfect bricklaying doesn't matter at all. The building still falls down.
Right.
And that is the center of gravity shift Landman is talking about. The application isn't a code base anymore. It is an assembled supply chain.
So this leads us right into what the sources call the perfect code, vulnerable release paradox.
Yes. This is exactly the scenario that is keeping security teams up at night right now. So imagine you are using all the latest AI tools.
Okay, I'm at my desk feeling very futuristic.
Right. The AI writes flawless code for your new feature. It compiles cleanly. Static analysis says zero bugs. You feel great.
I'm totally ready to deploy. I hit the button.
You trigger the build. Your perfect code gets compiled and packaged up with hundreds of those third-party binaries we just talked about.
All the dependencies.
Right. And one of them may be a logging library, maybe some obscure data parser deep down in the stack, contains a newly disclosed vulnerability.
Okay. Like the ghosts of Log4Shell past.
Exactly like Log4Shell. Or, to use a more recent example from the source material, the React2Shell incident.
Oh, right, React2Shell. Yeah, that was an absolute mess. But walk us through why that specific incident was so hard to actually fix.
Well, think about the panic during that incident. Was the panic, oh no, our developers wrote bad code?
No, definitely not. It was, oh no, we're using a library that is broken.
Exactly. But the real panic, the thing that caused all the chaos, was organizations asking, which of our thousands of releases actually contains this bad binary?
Because the vulnerability wasn't in the source code they wrote and had in Git. It was buried deep in the compiled artifacts.
Right. It wasn't a code quality problem at all. It was a binary visibility problem. Mm. And that is a huge distinction for anyone listening. It's no longer just about, did I write this correctly? It's now, do I even know what I just shipped?
And I imagine this is exactly where all the new legal stuff comes into play, too. We keep hearing about the Cyber Resilience Act, the CRA.
The regulatory landscape has changed completely because of this. You can't just shrug your shoulders anymore and say, oops, I had no idea that library was in there.
Yeah, ignorance isn't an excuse anymore.
Under the CRA, you are legally obligated to track the security of your released software. If regulators come knocking and you can't immediately say, yes, we are affected, or no, we are totally clean, you are incredibly exposed legally.
So relying entirely on AI to fix the source code I'm typing is great, but it's essentially ignoring the reality that my job is shifting. Yeah. I'm becoming way more of a supply chain manager than a traditional coder.
You are hitting the nail right on the head. You are managing a massive dynamic inventory of digital parts. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, it actually gets a bit darker.
Darker than legal liability.
Yes. Because we aren't the only ones with access to this amazing AI.
Right. The bad guys have it too.
They absolutely do. And this is the dark side of this whole AI revolution. While defenders are out here using AI to scan source code for bugs, attackers are using the exact same technology to learn how to hide.
Hiding in plain sight. Like generating code that looks innocent.
Exactly. Attackers can use AI to craft payloads that are specifically designed to bypass the AI inspection systems we rely on.
Wow.
They can generate obfuscating logic that just looks a bit messy but totally harmless. Or even worse, they can create what are called dormant backdoors.
Dormant backdoors.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds straight out of a spy movie. How does that actually work in practice?
It functions exactly like a sleeper agent. So imagine a piece of code inside a library. Let's say it's just a simple helper function for formatting dates. Yeah. It looks completely legitimate. It follows all the best practices. It passes the syntax checks. Your super smart AI code scanner reads it and says, yep, this looks like a perfectly valid date formatter.
So where's the actual threat?
The threat is context aware. The code has a hidden trigger.
A trigger? Like what?
It might check the environment variables. It might check the external IP address. So it stays completely asleep while it's running on your local laptop. It stays asleep in your testing environment.
Okay.
But the very moment it detects that it's running in a specific high-value production environment, boom, it wakes up and executes a malicious payload.
So the AI scanner, when it was looking at the source code back in the editor, saw absolutely nothing wrong. Because logically at that moment, there was nothing wrong until the context changed.
Precisely. It's a logic bomb. And remember, this malicious code probably isn't even in a file you wrote yourself. It could be hidden inside some obscure dependency that your AI tool just helpfully suggested you import because it solved a problem for you.
That is deeply terrifying. So a perfect-looking source file compiles into a totally compromised release, and I have absolutely no idea until it's way too late.
And too late might be a lot earlier than you think. Which brings us to another major point Landman makes in the thesis. The threat isn't just about what you ship to your end customers.
What do you mean? What else is there?
Well, we talk a lot about shifting left in security, right? Moving the checks earlier in the development process.
Yeah, catching things before they get to production.
But we really need to ask, are we actually looking at the right moment in time? Because this new breed of threat attacks the developer the exact moment they install a package.
You mean the literal moment I open my terminal and type npm install or pip install?
Yes. The developer's own laptop is now the first blast radius.
That's wild. I usually think of the danger being out there on the production server, you know, someone stealing customer data. But you're saying my personal machine is the immediate target.
Think about the mechanics of how modern package managers work. When you install a package, it very often runs post-installation scripts behind the scenes.
Right, to set up the local environment and dependencies.
Exactly. And those scripts run with your user privileges on your machine.
So if there's malware tucked inside one of those scripts,
it executes immediately. Before you've written a single line of new code, before you've even opened your code editor to let the AI scan anything.
Is this just theoretical at this point, or are we actually seeing this happen in the wild?
We are absolutely seeing it. The source material specifically mentions the Shai Hulud NPM worm.
Great name, by the way. Very Dune.
Very Dune, yes. But really nasty stuff. That worm activates right at installation time. Or look at the compromised OpenCloth skills mentioned in the research. These things execute their prerequisites locally the second you pull them down.
So if I unknowingly pull down a malicious package, it can do what exactly? Steal my SSH keys.
Steal your SSH keys, scrape your AWS credentials, quietly inject malicious code into other totally unrelated projects sitting on your hard drive. If your laptop is compromised, the attacker is already inside the walls before the build process even starts.
Okay, I have to admit, this is stressing me out a bit. I was so happy and optimistic about Aardvark and Claude Code at the very beginning of this deep dive.
Yeah.
So surely the answer here is just, I don't know, more AI.
More AI.
Yeah. Why can't the AI just watch the binaries too? Can't we just set up an AI watchdog to monitor the whole supply chain?
It's the natural question to ask, right? If AI caused the problem, surely AI can fix it. But Landman makes a really crucial distinction here, and it's between intelligence and governance.
Governance? Okay, that sounds significantly drier than artificial intelligence.
It's definitely less sexy, I'll give you that.
Right.
But it's arguably much more important right now. Here's the key difference. AI is amazing at inference. It deals in probabilities.
Right.
It looks at a block of text and says, there is a 95% chance this is the code you want to write.
It's a reasoning engine. It's making educated guesses.
Exactly. But governance is about control. It doesn't deal in guesses. It deals in hard facts and strict rules. It is totally deterministic.
Give me a concrete example of how that difference plays out.
Sure. AI can look at your project and tell you, hey, this library looks a bit suspicious based on recent patterns. Maybe you shouldn't use it.
Okay.
But an AI cannot act as an immutable single source of truth. It cannot strictly enforce a hard company policy that says, under absolutely no circumstances can this specific binary enter our production environment.
Because AI can make mistakes.
AI hallucinates. AI can be tricked by clever prompting. Think of it this way. You don't want a bouncer at a club who just thinks you might be on the guest list. You want a bouncer who checks the ID against the hard copy and says a definitive yes or no.
I see. So the AI is the advisor standing next to you saying, I really wouldn't do that if I were you. But governance is the actual gatekeeper saying you are not getting through this door.
That is a perfect analogy. You need a gatekeeper. Think about how we treat code. Git is the absolute system of record for your source code.
Right. If it's not a Git, it essentially doesn't exist for the rest of the development team.
Exactly. But ask yourself, what is the system of record for your compiled binaries?
I mean, I guess for most places, it's usually just a folder somewhere.
Hmm.
Or a generic cloud storage bucket.
For a huge number of organizations, yes, that's exactly what it is. And that is the massive gap in their armor. That's the vulnerability. Landman argues we desperately need a true system of record for binaries.
So something that acts exactly like Git does for code, but built specifically for the compiled artifacts.
Yes.
A true control plane.
So this is where the actual solution comes in. We really need two entirely different worlds of defense working together here.
Correct. Layer one is what we were so excited about at the start, code level defense.
Right. The Anthropic and OpenAI stuff, the proactive creation checks.
That's essential. You absolutely should use those tools. But layer two has to be binary level governance.
And what does that actually look like in practice for a development team, this control plane?
It has to definitively answer the hard questions. What exactly entered our organization? What is currently running in production right now? Can we trace this specific container back to its exact origin?
Yeah.
And critically, it has to actively block untrusted binaries before they ever download to your laptop.
Right, catching it before the NPM install finishes, protecting my machine from that first blast radius we talked about.
Exactly. A true gatekeeper validates provenance. It asks, where did this file actually come from? Is the digital signature valid?
Has it been tampered with in transit?
Exactly. And does the license actually allow us to legally use it?
And it does this for every single file being pulled in.
Every single artifact in the dependency tree. And here is the real kicker. It has to do it continuously.
Why continuously?
Because a binary that was perfectly safe yesterday might be declared totally vulnerable today.
Ah, that's a really key point. Source code is mostly static. Once I write it and commit it, it stays written. But the external knowledge about vulnerabilities, that changes every day.
Exactly. Code itself doesn't rot, but binaries do. Or, more accurately, our trust in them rots over time. A third-party library might sit securely in your storage bucket for 6 months, totally fine. Then suddenly, a security researcher finds a critical flaw. The binary file itself hasn't changed a single bit, but its security status has changed overnight.
So the governance system has to be constantly reevaluating all the old stuff just sitting in storage.
Yes. It has to be a dynamic, living system of record.
You know, Landman had a summary motto in the source material for this whole division of labor that I really like.
Yes, I know the one. He said AI strengthens what is created, but governance controls what is downloaded, built, stored, and released.
That puts it so clearly. We've all been so hyper-focused on the creation part because, well, it's the creative part.
It's the fun part.
Yeah, it's the fun part. It's the part where we feel like actual inventors. But the control part, the governance, that's what actually keeps the lights on and the customer data safe.
And if you zoom out, in a world where AI is now generating software at massive scale, that control becomes the literal only thing preventing total chaos.
Chaos is a pretty strong word. Are we really heading toward actual chaos?
Just think about the sheer volume. If AI can write code 100 times faster than a human developer,
Good, you can, yeah.
that means we are about to see an absolute tsunami of binaries entering organizations.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't even think about the math on that. If I can spin up a fully functional microservice in 30 seconds with a single prompt, I'm going to have a lot more microservices.
Exactly. And every single one of them brings in its own web of dependencies. Every one of them outputs a new binary artifact. The sheer volume of digital stuff you have to manage is going to absolutely explode.
Exponential.
It is. You physically cannot manually review the source code for all of that. Even with the best AI assistance, the cognitive load is just way too high for any human team.
So you have to fundamentally shift your overall strategy.
You have to shift from trying to review what is written to strictly governing what exists. You're moving from a craftsmanship model of software development to a heavy industrial management model.
That's a really profound shift for the industry. It's like moving from the romantic era of the lone hacker in a hoodie to the era of the supply chain architect.
Or even the risk governor.
Risk governor. I don't think I'm going to put that on my LinkedIn bio just yet. It sounds a little bit intense.
It does sound intense, but honestly, given the environment we're entering, intensity is probably appropriate.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, it really leaves you with a lot to chew on regarding our own roles in this whole ecosystem.
It does.
We started this conversation marveling at cool new features in our IDE, and we've ended up talking about heavy industrial supply chain management and sleeper agents.
It's quite the journey, but I think it's a necessary maturity phase for the whole industry. We are growing up, software just isn't a hobbyist pursuit anymore. It is the core infrastructure of the modern world.
Right.
And we need to start treating the digital parts we build with the exact same rigor that civil engineers treat steel and concrete.
I think the final provocation here for everyone listening is to really go back and look at your daily work with completely fresh eyes.
Absolutely. The next time you sit down at your laptop to code, take a hard look at your project folder.
Yeah.
Specifically, open up your node modules folder or your vendor directory.
Yes. The dark abyss where no developer ever dares to tread.
Open it up anyway. Scroll through the thousands and thousands of packages sitting right there on your machine
Right.
and ask yourself this: in a world where the AI is writing the actual logic for you, are you really a software creator anymore? Or have you unknowingly become just a procurement manager for digital parts?
Wow, that hits hard. Because if I'm really just assembling parts, I desperately need to know where those parts came from.
And the really critical follow-up question for you to mull over: if you don't know exactly, and I mean exactly, what binaries are running on your laptop right now, or what your latest build just pulled down from the internet,
Yeah.
then who or what is actually in control of your software?
Okay, I'm definitely going to be checking my activity monitor very, very paranoidly after we sign off here. and probably purging my entire cache just to be safe.
Good hygiene. I highly recommend it.
Well, thank you for that heavy dose of reality and clarity. Honestly, it's always fascinating to see how solving one massive problem like code quality just immediately reveals the next much bigger mountain we have to climb.
Always a pleasure. It's exactly what keeps this field so interesting.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep your code clean, but more importantly, keep your supply chain cleaner. We'll see you on the next deep dive.